Good afternoon. My name is Agnieszka Kłoń-Dominczak. I'm the Vice Rector for Science of the Warsaw School of Economics and also head of the Institute of Statistics and Demography. And today we have a webinar which is focused on the World Population Day. Yesterday, the Population Unit of the United Nations presented the new round of demographic projections, which cover the entire world. And this year we are also getting to know about the Polish population from the results of the recent population census that we had in Poland that we discussed amongst others during the third demographic congress, which is a series of conferences organized this year in Poland a couple of weeks ago together with the Polish Academy of Sciences, the Committee of the Demographic Sciences, which is headed by Professor Elżbieta Gołata, and the honorary chair of this committee is Professor Elżbieta Kotowska, organized a conference focusing on understanding the demographic change. So right now we will have an opportunity to see how the demographic change is diverse in the world, which is very important to understand the population processes and their consequences worldwide. We have a guest, which is a very important person. John Wilmot is a director of the Population Unit of the United Nations, which was responsible for preparing those projections. And right now, right from the source, we will be able to hear how the population will change in the future according to the projections. John, the floor is yours.
Thank you. If you can give me just a minute, I've lost something that I need, but I can get it open again.
Of course.
I'm managing a lot of technology here today, all on my own. Can I share my screen with you then?
Yes, you should.
I'm waiting for this.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to do that now. Here. I believe you see.
Yes.
Yeah. And does that take it to slide mode? Do I want to do that? Is that better?
Yes, it's perfect.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Good afternoon from the United Nations in New York. Of course, it's morning here, but I'm very happy to be here, and I want to express my appreciation to Agnieszka for inviting me to this event. Yesterday, as you know, we launched the report, World Population Prospects 2022, and a summary of results. The report provides an overview of global population trends, focusing on the period from 1950 to 2050. Underpinned by analyses of historical demographic trends. And we focus on that 100-year period up to 2050 because that's where we know more. But we also present population projections out to 2100. And those reflect a range of possible outcomes at the global, regional, and national levels. The report is accompanied by the World Population Prospects 2022 dataset. This is the 27th collection of global population data published by the United Nations since 1951. WPP, as we call it, is one of the most downloaded products of the Department of Economic and Social Affairs. The WPP dataset presents population estimates from 1950 to the present for 237 countries or areas, comprising the total population of the world. The estimates are underpinned by a detailed evaluation of all available data sources, including over 1,750 national population censuses and nearly 2,900 sample surveys. In order to better respond to the needs of member states and the United Nations system and other users like all of you, I hope, and also to ensure greater compliance with existing international standards for the production of population estimates and projections, for this edition of the World Population Prospects, we followed, it was produced following a major upgrade of the entire production system. A key feature of the upgraded dataset that we're releasing now is that it includes, for the first time, estimates and projections by single year of age and by 1 year time intervals. So this is the so-called one-by-one data configuration instead of the five-by-five layout that was employed previously. So this just gives you an overview of the production process. In preparing the new data, standardized and harmonized procedures were developed for various purposes. For example, to streamline the analysis and modeling of historical time series of fertility and mortality data, but also to evaluate and adjust population censuses, to estimate the level of net migration between two censuses, and to estimate population size and other demographic indicators consistently with internal consistency, thanks to the use of the cohort component method. So these new methods were developed and applied to data that are organized by single years of age and time, as I mentioned. The new data set is accompanied by various reports and other materials describing global and regional trends in population, including the three components of population change, fertility, mortality, and international migration. The results of World Population Prospects 2022 confirm that the world's population has grown considerably during the lifetime of the United Nations. From an estimated 2.5 billion people in 1950, the population has increased more than threefold. Around mid-November 2022, we project that it will reach and surpass 8 billion. Although the human population continues to grow, the pace of growth is slowing down. In 2020, the global growth rate fell under 1% for the first time since 1950. The slower pace of growth is attributable to the ongoing decline of fertility levels throughout the world. Today, two-thirds of the global population lives in a country or area where lifetime fertility is below 2.1 births per woman, which is roughly the level required for zero growth in the long run for a population with low mortality. Using demographic and statistical methods, we have projected the global population forward to 2100. Our latest projections indicate that growth will continue and that the global population could number around 9.7 billion in 2050 and 10.4 billion by 2100. So we can have a fairly high degree of certainty about the projections out to 2050, because in that year, for that year, 2050, more than half of the people who will be alive in 2050 have already been born. For 2100, however, and in the latter part of the century, the range of plausible outcomes is much wider. Rates of population growth vary significantly across countries and regions. More than half of the projected increase in the global population up to 2050 will be concentrated in just eight countries: the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Egypt, Ethiopia, India, Nigeria, Pakistan, the Philippines, and the United Republic of Tanzania. The region of sub-Saharan Africa is expected to continue growing through 2100 and to contribute more than half of the global population increase anticipated through 2050. Whereas for certain populations, there will be slower growth, but still positive growth. That's to say for Australia and New Zealand, Northern Africa and Western Asia, and the rest of Oceania, excluding Australia and New Zealand, for all of those populations, we expect slower but still positive growth through the end of the century. On the other hand, for other populations like those of Eastern and Southeastern Asia, Central and Southern Asia, Latin America and the Caribbean, and of course Europe and Northern America, we expect the population size to peak within this century and to begin declining before 2100. So although slower population growth worldwide is attributable almost entirely to fertility decline, the impact of a reduction in fertility on population on the population growth rate is not immediate, or it's small in the immediate near term due to the momentum of past growth. And in fact, we calculate that two-thirds of the projected increase in global population through 2050 will be driven by such momentum, which, as you know, is embedded in the youthful age structure of the current population. This growth due to momentum would occur even if childbearing in today's high fertility countries were to fall immediately to around two births per woman. However, the momentum of past growth dissipates over time. If the lower fertility rate continues in future generations, the cumulative impact could bring a more substantial reduction of global population growth in the second half of the century. Just as significant, I believe, as the increase in numbers is the fact that the global population is growing older. All of us individually are growing older, and so is the global population. Across the globe, the distribution of the population by age is shifting upward from younger to older ages. For example, the share of the global population at ages 65 and above is projected to rise from 10% in 2022 to 16.5% in 2050, and then 24% in 2100. While the share below age 15 is projected to fall from 25% in 2022 to 21% in 2050, and then 16.5% in 2100. So understanding and anticipating these changes, both the growth and the aging of the human population, are extremely important as the world seeks to set a path towards sustainable development. In most countries of sub-Saharan Africa, as well as in parts of Asia and Latin America and the Caribbean, the share of population at the working ages has been increasing in recent years, thanks to sustained reductions in the level of fertility, which lowers the proportion of children in the population and pushes up the share in the working age range. This upward shift of population from childhood to the working ages provides a time-bound opportunity for accelerated economic growth on a per capita basis, a phenomenon known as the demographic dividend. But to maximize the potential benefits of this favorable age distribution, countries should invest in the further development of their human capital by ensuring access to healthcare for all and to a quality education at all ages, and by promoting opportunities for productive employment and decent work. On the other hand, countries with aging populations should take steps to adapt public programs to the growing population of older persons, including by establishing universal health care and long-term care systems, and by improving the sustainability of Social Security and pension systems. International migration is having an important impact on population trends for some countries. For high-income countries in particular, in the period from 2000 to 2020, the contribution of international migration to population growth exceeded the contribution from the balance of births over deaths. That's to say that over that 20-year period, the inflow, the net inflow of migrants equaled 80.5 million, whereas the balance of births over deaths was just 66.2 million. So over the recent 20-year time period, migration was contributing more to growth in high-income countries than was the excess of births over deaths. Over the next few decades, the number of deaths will come to exceed the number of births in high-income countries, and therefore immigration will become the sole driver of population growth in high-income countries. By contrast, for the foreseeable future, population increase in low-income and lower-middle-income countries will continue to be driven by a substantial excess of births over deaths, which is considerably larger than the modest outflow of emigrants in most cases. All countries, whether experiencing net inflows or outflows of migrants, should take steps to ensure that such movements are safe, orderly, and regular. The COVID-19 pandemic has affected all components of population change, including fertility, mortality, and migration. For global life expectancy at birth, it fell by 1.7 years from 2019 to 2021. That's to say it equaled, in 2019, we estimate that global life expectancy was 72.8, and that fell to 71.0 in 2021, mostly due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. However, with much variability across regions and countries. Now, in high-income countries, the successive waves of the pandemic seem to have generated short-term fluctuations in numbers of pregnancies and births as well. In low- and middle-income countries, however, reported numbers of unintended pregnancies and births remained relatively stable over the course of the pandemic. So there's mixed evidence, in short, about what was the pandemic's impact on fertility globally. For migration, however, it's rather clear the pandemic severely restricted all forms of human mobility, including international migration. But even here as well, the exact magnitude of the pandemic's impact on migration trends is difficult to ascertain due to severe data limitations. One important point is that some of our estimates changed from the previous revision. There's a downward revision in terms of the estimated size of the global population at the end of the century. It's now a half billion lower than it was in the previous round of these estimates. Some of this comes from the evaluation of information coming from the 2020 Chinese census. According to the Chinese census of 2021, following that information, the estimated population of China in 2021 was 1.43 billion people. This is 1.3% lower than what we had in the previous 2019 revision of the WPP for the same year, 2021. The estimated levels of total fertility were revised downward based on the 2020 census and on registry data available up to 2020. So the revision of the data for China had important impacts, not only on the trends for that country, but for the trends globally. And one important milestone that we're announcing, in addition to the 8 billion milestone, the world will reach another milestone very soon, which is that India is projected to surpass China as the world's most populous country as early as next year in 2023. So my colleagues have just recently this morning added this slide here. I do not have a lot of commentary about it. It shows the population trends for various countries of Eastern Europe according to the projections. One thing that's noticeable is that, well, there are many countries in the world that are where we anticipate, I think it's, there are 61 countries or areas of the world where we anticipate that the population will decline by at least 1% between now and 2050. That includes several countries in Eastern Europe and several countries in East Asia as well, and in between, areas in between like Russia and China. Well, that kind of spans the globe from Eastern Europe to East Asia, basically. That's the area of the world where we see the most severe tendency toward population decline and very rapid population aging. Then I will say in conclusion, just that we often talk about people as being the center of sustainable development, but the population data that we published yesterday provide essential information about the people who inhabit this planet, how many we are, how long we live, how many children we have, and so forth. These data show the progress we have made in some aspects of sustainable development while also highlighting the need for further improvements. The data remind us of the demographic megatrends that shape today's world so profoundly and that affect our ability to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs. These data can be used by governments, international organizations, and other actors to anticipate future demographic trends and to incorporate that information into development policies and programs. These data are being used by the UN system for the global monitoring of progress in implementing the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. In fact, the global monitoring of progress towards achieving the SDGs relies on WPP data for around one quarter of the 231 indicators approved for use in this context. Over the years, the World Population Prospects has been one of the most downloaded products of the United Nations Department of Economic and Social Affairs. We're very proud to provide this essential information about the world's population. In closing, I just wish to recognize that this new data set is the result of almost 3 years of very hard and dedicated work by my colleagues in the Population Division. I really want to congratulate them and thank them for all that they have done. And I really wish to acknowledge the dedicated and hardworking staff members who have contributed to making this possible. And for you, I hope you will enjoy today's event, and I'm happy to be a part of it. Thank you again.
Thank you very much. And I think this very last slide indeed shows the challenges that Central and Eastern Europe has. And we see this little sort of, I don't know how to call it, bumps or discontinuities, especially within the Polish, Ukrainian, but also Romanian, yes, Republic of Moldova. So indeed, this is something that we observe right now at the moment with the war in Ukraine. We observe significant migrations from Ukraine to indeed those countries that I have mentioned, which affect the total population numbers. But also, we observe that Central and Eastern Europe is a region with very low fertility levels. So we are way below the 2.1 value in this green sphere. So if we had more shades of colors with the fertility levels being below 1.5 in, I think, all of those countries, and even close to 1.3, we have very low we have very low number of children and low fertility rates, while at the same time, with increasing life expectancy, we have many people that live up to the age of 80 or 100. So this indeed is a challenge for the region within the Europe region. And if you could a little bit comment first on those migration issues and especially the outflow of refugees, and also the challenges from the perspective of SDGs for the countries with low fertility levels and increasing life expectancy, increasing share of people at the very old ages.
Right. Well, you know, at the large regional level, Europe and Northern America is reaching a peak population size. It's the area that's the most advanced in terms of aging, and within that, there's sub-regions, in particular Eastern, Central and Eastern European countries, where this process has advanced really the most. And I mentioned that we count 61 countries or areas that are projected to see their populations decrease by 1% or more between 2022 and 2050. The largest reductions, with losses of 20% or more, are predicted to take place in the following countries: Bulgaria, Latvia, Lithuania, Serbia, and Ukraine, all obviously in Eastern Europe. Other Central and Eastern European countries are expected to see their populations decrease between now and 2050, maybe not all of them, but many of them. But generally, it's by smaller proportions. But that's to say by between 1% and 20%. So, you know, the list includes those that are going to decrease by at least 1%. And there are a few that are going to decrease by more than 20%, but many in between that range, between 1% and 20% decline over the almost three decades. So, I mean, this is expected to continue in your region for several decades because of the very low fertility rate that has been well below the threshold of 2.1 births per woman. And, you know, the result of this, as you're well aware, has been declining numbers of births and a population pyramid whose base is slowly shrinking or collapsing and creating a kind of inverted population pyramid compared to what we expected traditionally. So when you couple the very low fertility with continuing improvements in survival rates, we have to expect that both the number and the share of the population at older ages will continue to increase in the, for the foreseeable future in countries of Eastern Europe. You mentioned the trend that I showed in the last slide, and yes, indeed, you'll see that we have done our best to try and take account of the migration movements that have happened in the last year. It's all within 2022, I think, that this has happened, right? That this is an enormous movement of people over such a short time period. I'm sorry, we've lost. Yeah, there it is. It's an enormous movement of people, but you see the movements obviously out of Ukraine and into Poland and Moldova and other countries that have been receiving them for this period. I don't know if that fully answers your question, but those are some thoughts that I wanted to share.
Thank you very much. Indeed, I believe that for our region, the most important challenge will be to observe the consequences of these migrations. As you can see from the projections, you also assume that there will be some return back to Ukraine, and we keep our fingers crossed that it will be possible sooner rather than later, and at least some of the demographic trends will go back to a little bit of normal, though. Well,
I can tell you that for most refugee situations, we assume something like that most of the refugees will return within 5 years. But you know, the reality is we've seen certainly cases where that is not true. Certainly, the situation in Syria, for example, many people have been out of the country for much longer than that. Palestinian refugee situation, obviously, that's something completely different. But yeah, we're hopeful that there will be this return pattern within 5 years, and that's what's reflected here in this graph. But we don't really know.
Yes, we absolutely know that, and with Poland having at least 1.5 million of refugees and migrants from Ukraine right now in Poland after the since February, this is really something that we observe. But as I have said, we keep our fingers crossed that the situation gets back to normal. Let me right now turn on to the comments from Professor Gołata, who's the chair of the Demographic Sciences Committee of the Polish Academy of Sciences and a very close observer of the demographic developments in Poland, including the census data in particular. Welcome, and the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Agnieszka, and for organizing this webinar. And thank you to John for presenting the world population prospects released yesterday. I would like at the very beginning to underline how important this information and all the data is, not only for our country, but for all who care about the population trends and demographic change, which are crucial for planning the development of the countries. And I wanted to stress that this revision of world population prospects is already for the 27th edition, and it takes over 239 countries, and an enormous work was done by preparing the data for the projections, because they contain not only the estimates into future, but also the estimates, as it was mentioned, for from 1950, and it was an enormous work to combine different data sources. As it was mentioned, by more than 1,700 national population censuses in different countries, which were conducted from 1950 up to 2022. Well, in the last census, which was conducted in Poland last year, was not included in the data sources for Poland. But, well, in Poland, we conducted the census last year, while due to pandemic, many countries did not. They decided to wait because of this time of disease. And hopefully they will conduct the censuses to provide the data, which will be comparable between different countries. And well, my question is just for a comment. How did you work on the data to make them comparable, to increase the accuracy of the population stocks, and well, including different estimates and up to date to the recent data, which we were seeing on the last slide. Well, if
do you want me to take questions?
Yes, I just wanted you to comment on your yeah. On your work on accuracy and comparability of the data, and well. Thank you for implementing and taking into account so many different sources. And then yep. I will have also a comment on the Polish population okay. prospects.
Well, let me say this revision of the world population prospects is a major revision. It's we've rebuilt the entire system. It's really been an enormous amount of work, and that has several implications. One is that now we're presenting more detailed data in the one by one format instead of the five by five. But another feature of this upgrade of the whole production system is that we've made it more automatic and more standardized across analysts. So in the past, in order to reproduce the estimates that we produced for a particular country, you had to go to the country analyst and ask that person what was done. And you know, it was particular. There were particular choices that were made. There were different analysts had different ways of working. We've now made it much more standardized. For example, we do an initial set of estimates of fertility across all countries using a standardized method that kind of takes whatever data is available and decides what adjustments need to be made to make them comparable. And in a consistent way across all countries, we come up with our first estimates of fertility. We do the same for migration and mortality. And then we add it all up with the census data and we balance. You have to balance things at that point. But we've created a much more consistent and transparent and I think replicable method of constructing the statistics. And at the same time, we're trying, this is still a work in progress, we're trying to make all of the underlying data much more accessible so that if people want to go in and work with them and try to reproduce what we've done, that's what they can do. So, I mean, it's within that framework that we try to make things as comparable as possible. I don't know if I have any specific examples for you or if any of my team were here, they could probably tell you more detailed. But and how do we bring things up to date? Well, that's always a problem, you know, and we use the latest information available at the time that we produce the new revision. But then, you know, by the time we get it out, of course, new data are coming out from different countries. And sometimes we missed a trend and, you know, well, we'll fix it next time. You know, it's this is a work in progress. It's always continuously being updated, or at least every 2 or 3 years we update it. Normally we update it every 2 years. We took 3 years this time, partly because of the upgrade, but really more fundamentally because of the pandemic. It just became clear that it was really impossible to get everything together in time and coordinate the estimates of mortality with the World Health Organization. We worked very closely with the World Health Organization on mortality due to COVID associated with the pandemic. And our estimates of total mortality are consistent with the WHO estimates of excess mortality associated with COVID.
Well, thank you. When you mentioned about the estimate, you used for the projection the country definition of the population, or did you did not use the residential population?
I believe we tried to use a consistent definition of the resident population, of the usual resident population that is usually resident in the country, right? I believe we apply that as a uniform standard across all countries. So I don't know that in detail, though, about how that works. And I know that that is one issue that we need to address, I think, together with the statistics division. We've talked about this, but it needs to be the member states also who get involved, because I think we have such a variety of definitions of what is a population. Population estimates refer to different populations. And migrants refer to different groups of people. Partly it's related to the definition of who's in the population and who's out of the population. That affects who you count as a migrant. And so all of these things we need to work on more closely to standardize better internationally. We've never had really international standards for population estimates that would clarify some of these things, some of these issues for us.
Yes, sorry for stressing so much the accuracy of the projection, because there were already some comments in Poland when the Polish population exceeded 40 million, and of course how much important it is to the country and to the labor market to accurately estimate the immigrant and the number of refugees. But as you mentioned, it is visible today, but in the period of 5 years, we will see how this trend will probably change. And we experienced it already as concerns the Polish emigration during the last 20 years. And the threats, nevertheless, they show the aging of the Polish population. And the number of the share of population 65 years and all, according to the projection, will almost double by 2050, and even more than double in the prospect in the horizon of 2010, so 2100. So it is of course very important to know to look at the accuracy of the data, but the trends are the most important, and they are not changed as it was observed during the last years. Thank you very much for this projection and for such an accuracy, this year by year trend for more than 150 years. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yes, I say that it is value for all the researchers that especially do the international comparative analysis to have this kind of data. I'm involved in a network that works on national transfer accounts that looks from the generational economy perspective on transfers received, paid, and indeed by cohort. So having this kind of data is a tremendous value to produce further analysis of how those intergenerational transfers can look like with this kind of data. So this is very much appreciated, and it is a wealth of work done, and I think the population division here we are all extremely thankful for this job, which is an amazing job. Let me right now turn on to Professor Kotowska and her comments.
I will speak in this line, how we admire your efforts and the results of this artwork. Firstly, I would like to stress again that we expected the revision of world population prospect last year. But what we received this year, it is much more than we could expect because of this pandemic stories, because of the migration issues and so on. So I would like, in my evaluation of your work, to stress two dimensions. Firstly, these methodological improvements. For us, for demographers, it is really important to know how the methodology developed. And in fact, this shift from 5-to-5 to 1-to-1 configuration of age distributions and time interval in the projections is really fundamental for the data calculation, estimation, and so on. So when I like your description of the work which has been done, because it's for us, for users of your projections, it's really important to know how it happened. But what is also important is the continuous methodological, in terms of analytical methods, use improvements. So for us, it is also a possibility to learn about some new techniques, new approaches, new developments. So we as users of your work, we not only consider the results and comments about population prospects, but also we use this for our teaching tools for extending our knowledge in terms of analytical techniques, I would say, and how to prepare correctly data for this, for more accurate projection. So this improvements started several years ago, but what was happened during the last 3 years, I would say this is like a revolution in terms of rebuilding the whole system. And these people who know how to produce projections for single countries, can I think understand how huge effort you've done to prepare this for many countries. But what I really like is your careful approach to these regional differences and disparities taking into account the different stages of population transition in different regions. And this description is really clear. And I think that it is important not only to understand how you have prepared your assumption to these projections, but also to interpret correctly results and possibility to assess the likelihood of this different assumption. So this is also an opportunity to learn, to study the previous trends in terms of these disparities. So they are empirical data correctly prepared for us to demonstrate how this transition is developed in different countries. And the third very important, I would say, feature of your work is to account for this new phenomena, which matter for your assumption for population, for estimation of population stocks, and which requires some evaluation in terms of the impacts on fertility, mortality, and migration. And what I found really very useful for us as professional users, but also for other non-scientific users, is this table with different disasters. You classify this disaster and the possible impact on mortality, and the way you, I would say, cooperated with WHO to evaluate excess mortality. This is really important issue in in different countries, and especially in these countries which suffer a lot from these things. So I consider your achievements in these three directions, and this is really important for us for using these results of your projections, but also for commenting and explaining people why these results matter and how they were get. This is also important, which was the procedure to say that this population change is diversified across region and what is the contribution of several countries to the whole development in the world. And I have a question. It relates to the cooperation with different institutions in this data collection, provision, and so on. In your publication about this methodological approach, you mentioned that there were several disturbances to get data you needed for creating this good data system for population projections. And what do you think is important or the most, I would say, urgent in making the whole system, data preparation system, more resilient towards these different crises and what we could say, name as disturbances in data sources chains. We are now discussing these disturbances in logistic chains of different goods and products. And here there is a similar situation. They are also this distribution chains of this data, and they were disturbed during this recent crisis in terms of pandemic, but also in terms of different political conflicts, and how to work to make this data provision by these chains to your system more resilient.
I wish I knew the answer to this one. I'll tell you, that is one aspect of the work that we, along with WHO, we formed a technical advisory group for COVID mortality assessment. And one of the working groups of that technical advisory group is looking at these issues of the system, the statistical systems, and how to make them more resilient. Mm-hmm. But I haven't heard a report from them, and I'm not an expert in this area. I'm not sure what to tell you about what is the secret to ensuring that the systems are resilient and that they continue to deliver data during a crisis. This was obviously a big issue, and for many countries, the systems worked very well and they continued, and there was complete reporting as far as we can tell. But for many countries, the systems broke down at one level or another, like what you were describing. Maybe the information was being collected, but then it wasn't being transmitted the way that it was supposed to be. So, but I don't really, you know, this is not my area. This is a distinction that we have within the United Nations. We have a population division and a statistics division. And the short answer is that they collect all the information and they guide countries on how to collect the information. They're the experts on all of that. And then we take all that information. We're their biggest users. Yeah, you know, we're the biggest users of their data.
Okay, so not... I address this question to them.
I'm afraid I've got to refer your question to them because they're really the experts in that area. But it's a very good question. And I've heard some of this stuff, but like I said, I can't really give you an authoritative answer. Mm. But I just want to say, you know, your comments.
Thank you for your work, because it is really a huge improvement what you produced by this revision of this population prospects.
I just wanted to say, you know, I've spoke with various people about this revision, and it's really nice to speak with you, a group of professionals who I think you understand what we've done.
Yeah, what
and
has been done.
It's not small. This is not a small thing that we've done. We've really
made
a major change. Yeah. And so, and I'm so happy because, you know, it took a long time for us to get there. But I think, you know, it's the first step, and we will continue. we consider this the kind of a three-step upgrade of the system. We can't do everything all at once, so we'll continue doing this over the next two revisions. But it's what was needed. You know, sometimes you just have to go in and completely rebuild the system, and that's what we've done. And it's what we needed to do. And boy, the team worked very hard. I have to say, I worried about pushing them so much to get it done, but they did. They got it done. And I'm glad you appreciate all of that. So it's really nice. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you very much. And before we wrap up, we have a question from the chat on YouTube. So the question is, as changes in Chinese population are very important for the world population, I would like to ask about the reliability of the data on births in China. So can you comment on that? How do you assess the data on the population in China?
Yeah. So I'm not a technical expert on all these detailed things, but I will tell you that I know for China that we look at several different data series. We don't just look at the reported births. We look, for example, at the vaccination histories, which are collected by the health system. We look at the school enrollments. So, you know, we're looking, we're not taking just a single data source and trusting it as being the truth. We're comparing different data sources and trying to figure out what went on. There has been a controversy for many years in China about what is the true level of fertility. And there was a range of estimates that, you know, some people were at the high end of the range, some were at the low end of the range. And one of the Chinese demographers told me that with the 2020 census, that debate is over. And that most people now agree that Chinese fertility really is at the low end of the range of what was suspected, down around 1.3 births per woman, or even lower than that in the most recent years. So we don't know for sure. I would say there's still uncertainty on this point, but it seems that with the most recent data that became available, in particular the last census, there's now a greater agreement on it being a lower level. And so that did affect our global estimates, as I mentioned earlier.
Yes, thank you very much. We come to the end of our webinar, but I think it's very valuable for the demographers around the world to have the population division that does all this beautiful work of providing population projections, which are internationally comparable and of better and better quality, and really focusing on having this methodological progress with, as you have mentioned. I think for us in Central and Eastern Europe, it is also very important to understand that the world is very different. So when we see at the population in sub-Saharan Africa, in East Asia, in the different regions of the world, these are not the same population challenges and problems that the countries face, but yet different demographic developments raise different challenges. High fertility and the high mortality is a different challenge than low fertility and low mortality. Increasing number of deaths because of the COVID, which we experience right now, shows that there's a problem with, what happens with global pandemia and how they affect populations. But also how to develop population policies, especially in the times, for different populations, when we have a lot of older people, how to deal with that, how to provide long-term care that is viable for populations that have increasing number of older people. But all that is possible only if we have reliable population projections. So this is the basis for us, and not only for us demographers, but also for economists, people dealing with public policies. And again, a great thank you for all the work that you do. And thanks for being with us here and sharing with us your work.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much for your comments on our work.
So it's time to use this data. Bye-bye.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very
Bye-bye.
Much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.